Good evening. This is Mae Bressel in Pacific Grove, California, KAZU-FM. It's broadcast number 563, and it's September the 20th, 1982. There's been so much important news going on this past week. Many of you are aware of the interrelationship of some of these events. I'll run them down for you. I wanted to do an entire program on the murder of Grace Kelly. I'll get into a little bit of that, and then, of course, next week I'll do a lot more. But her death came at a time where many other important events that were not separate from it, that were related to it, were taking place. One of the main events, of course, was the murder of Bashir Gemayel in Lebanon, and we'll go into that in detail, I hope. Lissy Ogelli, just when I came on the air last Monday, was arrested in Switzerland. I think he'll be sent to Italy for many charges. They're not going to charge him for the murder of 86 people at a tunnel or the train blew up, but other charges. And Lissy Ogelli went to collect hundreds of millions of dollars out of the Swiss banks, but I believe that at this time he had to be sacrificed to protect the Vatican. Fernand Marcos was in the White House being entertained by Ronald Reagan, another one of his dictators. There was a cartoon in the paper this morning of Marcos laughing at Ronald Reagan, saying, "Oh, I'm a voice of reason." And it's a picture of him eating a bowl of rice or spaghetti, and they're actually people that he's eating. And then there was the murder of Mr. Ghazpadeh in Iran, a very important event for the news that it revealed and the person he was and what was going on with the Shah of Iran and with Khomeini over in the Middle East. And, of course, the massacre in Beirut, a shocking phenomena, but predictable considering the cast of characters. Ernest Hemingway in Farewell to Arms had a quotation where he stated, "If people bring so much courage to the world has to kill them to break them. Of course it kills them. The world breaks everyone, and afterwards many are strong at the broken places. But those that will not break, it kills. It kills the very gentle and the very good and the very brave impartially. And if you are none of these, you can be sure it will kill you too, but there will be no special hurry." Well, this quotation of Farewell to Arms was written, it pertained to the Spanish Civil War, and the era from World War I, World War II, up to the present day, has been one of continuously killing people, voices of opposition against fascism, Nazism, oppression, the civil rights movement, and so forth. You have an A to Z of people, hundreds of people, thousands of them that have been murdered. But the phenomena that's taking place now when I mention these particular characters is that they who have killed are killing each other off. They have emptied the banks of Europe. They did it after World War II and took counterfeit money, stocks, gold, art treasures. They killed presidents, candidates for president, senators, musicians, people from various cultures in other countries, people that would be presidents, people for experimentation, such as Jonestown. And now the power structure, because the banks are collapsing, because they're looking for the missing hundreds of billions of dollars, the power structure is forced to deal with the people involved in many of the murders, a single or mass murders. And when they go to scratch the banks, because that's where it hurts the most, the manipulation of the international, national, local banks. When you go looking for the money, you get the killers. And therefore, what you're seeing in the headlines now are the killers killing each other. The quotation of Hemingway is not as important now as what is taking place, the phenomena, and in the newspapers today. Now, since July, since the former president of Lockheed was murdered in Pennsylvania, I have done a continuous series, and even earlier, with a play on words called high society, because Grace Kelly and Frank Sinatra and William Holden and the entourage around them, even if you pass her off to Prince Rainier, she is and was not society, and neither are they. The misnomer of the last movie she made before she became the head of Monaco was so outrageous that I used the term, and I mentioned several people on past broadcasts, the title of the sheets, particularly there's one July 19th on this station. It was tape number 554 on the murder in Pennsylvania, the Lockheed connections, and Mr. Khashoggi, his connections to Lockheed and the CIA and to William Holden. William Holden was a close friend of Princess Grace, and her daughter was married to Philip Juneau, who works and worked for Khashoggi as a representative. So he had one foot in that palace. I talked about Edwin Wilson being arrested and his arms merchant Samuel Cummings in London with his headquarters in Monte Carlo. Those were the headquarters of Zaharoff. And what you have in Monte Carlo is a combination of deposed monarchy, the organized crime syndicate, the ships of Aristotle Onassis, the oil dealers trading oil and bringing back hashish and opium and narcotics to spread around the world. You have the deposed monarchy. So in Monte Carlo, you have the monarchies, the munition people, the organized crime, the would-be kings and queens, the weapons by which they hope to get back on the throne, the drug dealing, the international drug dealing, and it's a combination of forces there that can't bring much good to anybody. And if somebody like Grace, who I refer to as a gopher or a bag woman, she touches all the bases from the Philadelphia CIA to the monarchies, traveling around to the Hollywood clique, to the casino table. She's a pivotal female. And when the ship begins to sink, I would have guessed, as I suggested last July 19th, that she would be caught in the web. There was a quotation in the paper this week about Monte Carlo and Princess Grace in the Monterey Herald. It was an AP story. It said, she quickly lent a new air to the tiny Mediterranean enclave that Somerset Maugham described as a sunny place of shady people. Well, when you are dealing with pretenders to fallen thrones and exile and assorted nobility, and the likes of Aristotle Onassis and the gang that surrounded Monaco and Princess Grace. And when, as I say, the pieces, the raw nerves of these intrigues get collected in the multinational banks that fold with the scandals going on, it has to sweep somebody like this into the web. And that's why this last July 19th, if you have the printed sheet that accompanies this broadcast of the tapes, you'll see I have Princess Grace's name on there and Monaco with pretending a situation I could see where she was going to have to resign. And I would say that the Queen of England soon will step down also because of the same circumstances and scandal surrounding her. Before I get on to the other subjects, for light reading, I was reading a book by John Steinbeck, a marvelous book called The Short Reign of Pippin the Fourth. Now, this book was written in 1957, before Jacqueline Onassis was playing monarchy in the White House, before Richard Nixon had his funny guards that were supposed to look like the monarchy, before Nancy Reagan was dressed up in her diamonds and pretending, you know, to be the future queen with Ronnie the actor. John Steinbeck wrote this in 1957, and there were a few pages that describe the situation of these people, these so-called rulers, because again, Mr. Gospodet, if he were to rule Iran, or Mr. Gamal, or Ferdinand Marcos, or Ronald Reagan, or Princess Grace, they are creations of the Central Intelligence Agency. There's no royalty in them. There's no royal blood in them. They want to assume the position of world leaders, and they're literally, their hands are dripping with blood. If they weren't involved, they covered it up. And the price of getting their position is so tremendous, and they play this game. And in the short reign of Pippin the Fourth, Steinbeck wrote about a particular gentleman in France who, interestingly, was selected to be the future king. They had elections. They decided they'll put a monarchy back on the throne. And he lived in a house of the Knights of St. John. That's interesting because of the ingredients of the military order of Malta that is spread through our intelligence community from the Vatican and the Sovereign Military Order of Jerusalem in Pennsylvania, and the heads of our CIA that seem and Defense Department who are knighted into the services of the Vatican. So a Mr. Pippin Amulf Herestal is chosen, and his family is the future monarchy, and they decide that it would be good for the restaurant business, for the hotel association, Steinbeck said, because people loved royalty and there'd be a lot of tourism. And as I mentioned last week, Permandex was set up just about the time he was writing this in 1957. He wrote this in 1960-61. Permandex was a cover for the assassination teams under the hotel organizations around the world. And Steinbeck talked about the royalists of France, or for that matter, any country, he said, that enjoyed playing the role of gallantry of aristocracy, and how the United States really secretly loved royalty, and that they would start giving loans and money, and Congress would give money to the Lafayette Fund, that we'd have reasons to fund the monarchy because we really loved it so much, and Steinbeck made fun of that. He said, what would the American government think of the change? Would the American State Department be likely to continue to recommend the same financial aid to a kingdom as they would the Republic of France? And the answer, he says, is it's the nature of American foreign policy to distrust liberal governments and strongly favor the authoritarian, such as Venezuela, Portugal, Saudi Arabia, Transjordan, Egypt, Spain, and Monaco, for example. So he said, when the Americans know that we have a monarchy, they will have a subsidy, and they'll give us funds to fight communism, and there'll be a Lafayette Fund for the school children to refurbish Versailles as soon as America finds out France has a monarchy. And then he tells about the problem of the crowns, and they'll go to Van Cleef and Arpels and Harry Winston. Well, Harry Winston is the jeweler who has given Nancy Reagan allegedly $1 million worth of diamonds that she has not returned. This was written in 1957. And then Steinbeck tells how you promote your king or your monarchy. You get advertising agencies. And this was written before J. Walter Thompson was exposed for being behind Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. And he tells about the staffs and how they'll write the speeches, and how a president can't make a speech. Nothing's left to accident. He's rehearsed, and there's authority in his voice. He's staged like Marilyn Monroe, he says. He has a stage manager, and it's rehearsed. And the agency takes care of all this. It's called institutional prestige. So one of the things that we're seeing right now is institutional prestige running around hiding some of the things they've done in order to get where they are. And I'll do more in a little while about Grace if we have time, or for sure get back to it next week. But I do want to run down some of those most important events that took place simultaneously or just before her accident. As I say, the one article from the Los Angeles Herald, Italy is extraditing their most wanted man. Lizzie O'Gelli is the most wanted fugitive in Italy. He caused some of Italy's worst post-war scandals. He belongs to the super-secret Masonic Lodge, the Propaganda Due. He's called the Grand Puppeteer by the Italian press. He's wanted for political espionage, criminal association, extortion, and fraud. Well, if he is the Grand Puppeteer, who puts him on top and who orders him? I would make an educated guess based on my research that it is IG Farben. It is the lay organization of the church, the Opus Dei, and the meshing of these organizations that gives Lucio Gelli the ability to be a dual citizen in Argentina, in Italy, to fund the Peruvian government, to fund the Argentine government, to fight Great Britain, and eventually the United States. Even though he was at the inauguration of Ronald Reagan and gave money to the presidency of Ronald Reagan, he is still wanted for espionage, criminal association, extortion, and fraud. And they also want him for the, they're going to question him on the murder of people blown up at Bologna last year, which goes into our military, Alexander Haig, NATO, and the CIA, and the so-called terrorism that they tried to blame on the left. Now, Mr. Gozbadeh got the death penalty this week. He was shot in Iran. He confessed to the plans to remove Mr. Khomeini and to assassinate the leaders. When I was talking about assassinating individuals, killing leaders, I've been on the air 12 years. When I was first doing this, it sounded so horrendous and far-fetched that it was really hard for many people to understand. But now you read it in your papers every day, and it becomes a very matter-of-fact thing. And this morning, Hamilton Jordan was on the TV. Maybe you saw him. He has sections of his new book, reprints. It's called Crisis to Crisis. I believe that's the title of it. It's in Newsweek this week. And he tells how he secretly disguised by the CIA met Mr. Gotsbaday. And they said, if you want the hostages out, all you have to do is kill the Shah of Iran. And that would be easy. He says, give him some of those CIA injections and make it look like a natural death. Well, you see, Hamilton Jordan knows the CIA makes things look like natural deaths. Even someone like Grace, who can have a collarbone broken or broken leg, and the husband and the priest are with her, and she's fine, and they go home, and all of a sudden, she's gone. I'm not saying exactly how it happened. You simultaneously can't have a stroke, and the brakes go out. It's impossible. I don't know what the odds are, mathematical chances of that happening simultaneously, or having a man at the exact spot when the car goes over those hills between France and Monte Carlo. Take those three combinations, and then destroy the car in France, where the accident took place, can't look at the brakes, and Monaco won't let them look at the brakes. So you get a simultaneous person on the spot, a stroke, and a brake goes out. Okay? I don't believe it happened that way in the first reports. She seemed to be all right. I don't believe it happened that way. But getting back to what they can do, Hamilton Jordan says they suggest him try one of those natural deaths. So there it is on the front page of your papers today, and it'll be in his book. And then a doctor in Panama was offered $1 million to kill the Shah with surgery or while he was sick there. The fact they didn't die in Panama, they died in Idra 3 weeks later, doesn't mean he didn't have something that would make him die 3 weeks later, or that someone in Panama didn't do it. The point is that it's very open now. It's in books, it's in talk shows, it's in the radio. How they do it, if you want to know how you get an apparent heart attack or an apparent stroke with no autopsy, and you cremate them immediately, just as, say, Nelson Rockefeller, telephonically, the doctors at La Costa in California, Dr. Bodden from the CIA, and Nelson Rockefeller dies, and on the phone they say, cremate him right away from an apparent heart attack. Well, that's the way you get rid of people that stand in the way of a man who wants to be president, and that's the way you manipulate a former ally that you put in office. Now, Hamilton Jordan is writing about an experience with Gotsbaday. Gotsbaday is dead. The Shah is dead. The characters move on, but the techniques remain the same, and the people out there are still innocent or stupid in the way the system works. And what I try to expose are some of the scandals that are going on and the monarchies that are entertained in our White House. There should be a halt to people like Mr. Pinochet, the president of Argentina, of South Korea, Ferdinand Marcos. Wherever we put martial law in, wherever the people are killed and tortured, they shouldn't get these royal receptions in the White House as if they were distinguished potentates. That should be reserved for people who earn that honor. How many times can the White House be tainted with people who killed the person just preceding them and then took the throne? We know the history of monarchies and the history of the world is a continuous series of events like this, but what role models do we have to pass on to our children or to our history books or to ourselves? I mean, who do you look up to and who do you respect? Now, this massacre that took place in Lebanon was a horrible thing. There was one article in the San Francisco Examiner, UPI story. It was a hellish sight like Jonestown. Well, Jonestown was a Christian church killing Christians. There's 130 people out there, according to Senate testimony, that shot people in the legs and back or injected them in the back that killed over 900 American citizens. And there was no outrage. Jimmy Carter said, let's not overreact. So instead of 900, there's 1,200 women and children in Lebanon. But if you allow Jonestown to happen, then it's Lebanon. And then pretty soon it's going to be your home and your town. And you're not going to have anything to argue because You've sat and watched this terrible sight. The newspaper pictures of the refugee camp are horrible. But where is the innocence of the American people? We sold the guns to the PLO through Mr. Wilson and Turple and Mr. Carlos, who's still over in Beirut. We sell the guns to Mr. Jamal. That's good money for America. We sell the guns to the Israelis, and we just keep manufacturing them. We sell the newspapers that tell the story, the Time and Newsweek and the reporters and the news analysts. And everybody makes a buck talking about it, and nobody is interested in stopping it at all. If there's any innocence left in the American people for what's going on over in Lebanon, and two wrongs never make a right. I just got finished reading the new edition of Counterspy this month, the May-June issue. U.S. Green Berets torture in El Salvador, and a fellow who left El Salvador escaped and went to Mexico. There are articles about his experience in the New York Times, a series of four articles starting January the 11th, 1982. The Green Beret went over there and took the military, and they showed him. He was in the army in El Salvador. They took people, and they took a woman. They raped her. They pulled the hair out of her scalp. They put rods and so forth into her genitals. These were lessons of men from Fort Bragg in North Carolina. They pull out fingernails. They broke elbows, gouged out the eyes of the men and women, sliced the skin around the chest and arms and legs, took the hair and skin off the scalp, threw gasoline on one man and burned him, took another one and threw them out of an airplane. At 14,000 feet, he was alive and tied, thrown out to sea. The Green Berets came down to teach the El Salvadorians how to torture, how to mutilate, how to handle citizens of their own country. The United States pays them. You're paying their salary. They're down there. So you can't act outrage if you pay your taxes and you sit and take this. You can't act outrage at what's going on over in Lebanon. Now, I've talked about the drug dealing of Mr. Begin and Mr. Jamal and how the hashish is in bloom now. And boy, it's a big battle as much for drugs as for any other thing in the area. Spotlight, which is Liberty Lobby, a very far right-wing newspaper, many people like it, has an article before Jamal was murdered. This was last week. Lebanon's leader shown as a bandit and a murderer. He's involved in terrorist acts. It tells how he kills, how he mistreats people, kills his opponents, how his troops killed 50,000 people in the last 7 years. Now, the United States has an election. We get our best people, the McNeil-Lear Report, the so-called intellectuals, Meet the Press, Face the Nation, the elections in Lebanon. Those weren't elections. They were hand-picked people, picked since Mr. Jamal's father was picked by Adolf Hitler and Mussolini, forming the Falange. And Pierre Jamal was a pharmacist in 1936 when the Falange was set up over in Lebanon. I wonder, as being a pharmacist, if he worked with IG Farben and those chemical companies and Sterling Drugs and so forth that were set up during the war period. But Liberty Lobby has a long article about Jerry Falwell backs the Lebanese Christian killer. Now, Liberty Lobby is a Christian conservative right-wing paper telling about the massacres of Jamal and the money that we've poured into his outfit. So when he becomes president and America and Israel select him as their president, and he's killed, then a slaughter comes out for women, children, the pets in the villages to wipe out these poor people. They've lived with nothing for how many years? For 34 years in tents on the fringe of society. And we come in and kill them some more to get rid of them, to keep the property safe for American investments. The New York Times, a different kind of a paper than Liberty Lobby, has a story on Bashir Jamal. This was August 24th, 1982, as commander of the Falangist Christian military forces, known as the Lebanese forces. It was no secret that his troops received money from Israel. Mr. Begin himself gave aid of $100 million, and there's a story even up to $250 million, as early as 1976 that Israel had been funding this particular person as against the Arab population, the other people in the area, Israel and the Jamal family. We're going to divide this up. Now, the point is that you can't predict in Iran that the Shah has to be the ruler there, that Jamal has to be the ruler here, that Marcos has to be the ruler there, that we can decide in Taiwan or South Korea or El Salvador or Guatemala or Chile or Argentina or Brazil, where we had a coup right after Kennedy was murdered in 1964 with the help of Vernon Walters of the State Department, CIA, Sovereign Military Order of Malta. There's going to be a time where people are beginning, I think they're beginning now, to look at the United States, and we're going to have to look at ourselves and say, what have we produced? We have a president assassinated in this country just less than 20 years ago, his brother assassinated, the civil rights leaders killed. Who is speaking up for the American people, and how long do we have to have these bloodbaths? I heard Ronald Reagan talking today, and New York Times will print up the transcript. That's the advantage of taking that particular paper. He said absolutely nothing except we'll send troops there. Well, I remember when we had troops in the Persian Gulf when the hostages were taken, and it cost, I think it was $1 million a day to keep the ships out there. We couldn't get the hostages out till they were ready to release them, and this country is going bankrupt trying to support something that shouldn't be there in the first place, that has no sense and no reason. There was another article in the New York Times, September the 3rd, this was just 2 weeks ago, the full outlay of money to reconstruct Lebanon is $95 million. Could the United States use $95 million for rapid transit in a city, for schools or for education or trade, to teach minority people, whether it's computer or data banks, or you see classified ads for jobs, they're not trained for them, to get them skilled. I just read that the Soviet Union built 1 million new homes this year, and they're going to build 1 million more later. I'm not lauding communism, but how are we going to compete with systems that have a house for everybody while we're giving millions of dollars over there to, we destroy the city, then we send $95 million to build it up again, and they don't even have a solution of what to do with the place. One final article before I get Jamal's assassination, I don't think we have to go into that too much in detail, from the San Francisco Examiner, August the 19th. And it says, by 1980, Jamal ordered his private army to move against one of his chief Christian rivals, the gunmen of former President Kamil Shamoun. He slaughtered as many as 500 of them in a day-long string of surprise attacks. They referred to him as the mafia chieftain who governs by the gun and violently eliminates political dissent. Now, how can the United States recognize him as the elected president and encourage Israel to fund him? Or we fund him? The whole world knows what he is. You can take any section of newspapers. I'm just using a cross-section from the New York Times, the Liberty Lobby, the San Francisco Examiner, and I have a pile more on this particular person. How can you build him up as a statesman? What is this person or any other person that we put into office? And this isn't far removed from Grace Kelly or Fernando Marcos or any of these other people. Grace didn't slaughter anybody, and she certainly doesn't have a track record such as Jamal, but they're not world leaders. They represent and are a cover for crime syndicates. If Jamal grows opium and hashish and sends it through the three main ports of Lebanon and through the 100 banks of Lebanon, it then hits Marseille and hits France, and the action and the bankers and the profits are used for those deposed monarchies. So, in fact, the Shah of Iran's widow was at the funeral of Princess Grace. And, of course, the Shah was one of the big dealers of opium and the opium market, and the Southeast Asian profit coming in from dope, trying to cut up the Turkey competition by paying them off, again, with taxpayers millions of dollars. This was the kind of operation that the United States was working, knowing the Shah and his family also were involved in narcotics. So as long as we're pushing these people, there will be these crises. We can talk about them every week, but they're going to keep going, and it's going to keep worse as time goes on. Now, I'm going to take a break, and I'll get back with you in 1 minute.